Welcome to episode 213 of The Numbers Game. I'm Jace. I'm here with Marty and Tommy's back again. How are we, guys?
Going well, thanks, Jace. Great to have Tommy back. Our producer that we much love makes us look good, makes us sound good. We're pretty much a mess if it's not for Tommy. So good to have you back, Tommy. Good to have you back.
Thanks, mate. I know what it's like to have to take the paternity leave like Nico, so I hope he's enjoying it and we'll see him soon. But thanks for having me, boys.
Jace, how are you going? I thought I'd ask this episode. I usually just get straight to the point. How are you, my friend?
I was waiting for it this time. I was like, geez, am I gonna? I just don't want to be skipped over again. I feel, Tommy's on. He takes a lot of attention. He's the most popular. We still get messages from the last ep that came out saying, thank God Tommy's back. This is brilliant. But, mate, I'm good. It's been a couple of weeks since I got back from Chicago, Mexico, New York trip. Did the marathon, as people know. I talk about it all the time. It's like anyone who does a marathon continues to talk about how they do marathons. So, a couple of weeks back in action, getting things, the business all back on track. Sometimes, things can go a little bit, everyone knows what it's like to run a business. Things can go off the rails a little bit, but, in the lead up between now and year end or Christmas, it's all hands on deck. So it's pumping, looking forward to getting through to the year end celebrations. It's been, another big year, 2024, and another bajillion Numbers Game episodes under the belt, which is exciting, but no, it's been good. It's been really good.
Jace, have you been following our friend Adrian Portelli from LMCT Plus?
Oh, he's mate.
I was watching the block back a couple of weeks ago. He's just come out like big play, bought all five houses, unbelievable. And its prize is going to be all five houses to one winner, which is incredible coverage he got through that, and it's a Boxing Day present for someone.
How insane is that, though? Right? Insane. Yeah, I'm glad you brought it up. We'll spend a minute or two here before we dive into a different topic. But this, watching that unfold, gets all of the houses. I think he spent about $15 million, which is just incredible, to be able to do that. But again, the publicity, because people are like, oh, how, what's the point in doing it? What's he getting out of it? But the publicity on this alone is huge. And for anyone who doesn't remember, Adrian Portelli, he's dubbed the Lambo guy. He has LMCT Plus, which is a membership-based rewards and giveaway platform. We've done an episode on it way back in the catalog, but if you Google The Numbers Game, Adrian Portelli, you'll find that pop up somewhere. We might be able to put it in the show notes here if you're new to the show and haven't listened to that one. But effectively, he sells a membership and rewards subscription, but it puts you into the draw to win giveaways and prizes. So, obviously the more subscribers he gets to his rewards program, the better for his business. And I was running some rough numbers on, when I first heard it, he's dropped $15 million on the houses. And then if you choose not to take the whole block resort, if you are the lucky winner on December 26th, you can opt for $8 million cold, hard cash tax-free, which is not too shabby at all. I thought, well, geez, wonder how many subscriptions or tickets he's got to sell to make this a reality. And just, if you're going to go into it, the maximum ticket you can get is the $500 platinum ticket, which gives you, I think it's like 1,000 entries into the draw. Now, he's only got to sell 30,000 tickets, I say only, but he's got a huge following and there's millions of people that are probably hearing about this right now, and the media's blown it up over the last couple of weeks. 30,000 tickets doesn't seem like a big stretch to be able to cover your $15 million that you dropped buying five houses. Obviously, then the ticket prices go down from $500 for the entries, but you can imagine that the peak volume, people are going to drop $50 to $100 to be in the draw to win. Tommy, Marty, will you guys at least get a couple of tickets and maybe we all get a ticket and we can get a house each? We're going to have a numbers game ticket. Tommy gets one, Nick gets one, Jace, Marty, maybe Greg if he's like, Greg, if you're listening, we might give you a house maybe.
I think you're doing the best out of this because it's a paid promotion for Adrian Portelli, which is I'm joking, but that is what people have said on the last episode on YouTube. They said, oh, this is definitely a paid promotion, but it's just gambling. I've got no use. I won't say it is gambling because you'll probably come out and sue me. It's a raffle, but I have no interest in trying my luck at that. I'd rather put my energy into something else. But I guess you got to be in it to win it. Or if you're in it and you're trying to win it, you'll probably lose based on the odds.
You say that, and randomly, one of our clients won a boat. He got the phone call. Yeah. So true story. One of our clients, Tony, and if you're listening, Tony, gonna share your story. He got the phone call. He was in Bali, like staying at a nice resort, and he got the phone call. And because people hear it live, you can listen to the calls live on the Facebook Live when he does the calls for the winner of the prizes. And Tony got a call. He's sitting in a nice resort in Bali on leave. I think he was writing a book at the time, and he got a phone call saying, you know, you've won the boat. It's a $100,000 kind of fishing boat and branded LMCT on the side. And by the time he got back from Bali, it was delivered to his driveway.
Oh my God. Yeah, just quickly, if I win five houses, do I have to pay some sort of tax, or is it, what's the implication?
I think they transfer the stamp duty and they cover all that.
Yep, all covered.
But I think if you're selling, obviously, that would be interesting. What about capital gains on that, Chase? If you win five houses and you don't rent them out and you want to sell them, is there a capital gains issue or not because you want it in a raffle?
Oh, geez, yeah, there's some big tax implications there. I'd need to unpack that in a lot of detail. But, yes, that you're screwed from a tax sense. You know, when you go and selling properties, you get one main residence. You can't move into the entire five-house resort and call that your main residence and make it tax-free. But there might be some strategies around moving into one of the properties to make that your main residence. You'd be able to kind of get that tax exempt, and then maybe the other four, you're a little bit stuffed. But yeah, the 8 million, that's where potentially then the people who, you know, think about this further go, oh, maybe the 8 million tax free becomes a better option than owning five properties that I have to pay land tax for starters. Land tax would be quite a bill, you know, and then going down that flight path. But yeah.
What would you do, Jace? Would you take the five or the 8 mil?
I think I'd take the five. I think I'd take the five houses and, oh, geez, no, I don't know. 8 million cash is a lot of fun too. You can do a lot with that. I don't know. What do you reckon, Marty? What would you do?
I think I'd go the 8 mil because I'd put it into stuff that I'd want to put it into. I don't necessarily want to own half of Phillip Island.
Yeah.
Like, it probably makes sense to keep them in some way, shape or form. But, yeah. It'd be a nice problem to have.
You can't gift a property, can you, without having some implication for the person you're gifting it to?
Yeah, there's implications. Yeah. I mean, that's why I think, you know, from the prize point of view, if you're winning a prize, that, you know, winning prizes in Australia doesn't have the tax implications that other places in the world do. But it's more after that, like the tax implications on any income you're earning from the properties, got to pay tax on. As I said, land taxes and whatnot. But again, likewise with the 8 million tax-free cash, as soon as you then start investing that, you're paying tax on the earnings. But again, you've got 8 million tax-free. It's not a bad starting point.
I'd love to know the odds, first of all, but I'd love to know the payout rate. Like I think he pays out a fair bit on what he gets, just purely because he's just building such a pipeline of opportunity. But I'd love to know what those ratios are, like what he gets into what he pays out, because he's given away a fair bit, million bucks, then 250 and boats, and it's crazy stuff.
Well, yeah, I mean, just from
get him on.
Yeah, but we should try. Off the top, though, so this is the interesting thing as well. You got to look at the market value of the property, which I think is what's going to cause some potential complexities. I mean, there's the price Adrian Portelli pays at auction, but you could argue that that's really not market value. So if you chose to take the five properties, and let's say maybe that's why he's matched the 8 million tax-free cash. It might be, let's say the market value might be closer to 10 million on those properties. So if you get five houses, call it 2 million real value each, that becomes the cost base of your home for all those properties. You get $2 million cost base each. So because the ATO doesn't require you to declare prizes won in lotteries or raffles as income, that becomes the cost base of your property. So if Marty decides to take the five houses, keeps them for 5 years, rents them out, and then decides to sell them at some point in time, Marty's only going to pay tax on the profit he makes of the value of $2 million the day he got that given the house. And then let's say he sold it for $2.2 million a few years later, Marty only pays tax on $2 million capital gain, usually then discounted down to $100,000. He gets the other $2 million tax-free, the same way he would have if he took the cash.
So what does that make you think, Jace? What's better option, taking the I'd
have to get a local Phillip Island real estate agent to go down there and whip a quick property valuation up for me, and then I'd make my call. But I don't know, the idea of owning an entire resort down in Phillip Island, you know, feels pretty cool too. I mean, you know, you can have a bit of fun with that.
Yeah.
A good problem to have regardless, whether you take the cash or the properties. And it certainly changes your game.
Listeners out there, love to know what you think. No, we're not sponsored by Portelli.
No.
But if anyone knows Adrian and he would come on and have a chat with us, we'd love that. So feel free to hit him up on our behalf and send him our way. Let us know also what you would take, the cash or the house. But we are here to deliver other value more than talking about Adrian Portelli, which has been all over the news for weeks. Let's talk to Marty about your show today. What have you got for us, Marty?
Well, today I wanted to talk about business, and I've been thinking about what you've been talking about over the last year and a half with AI, Jace, and I just, from what I'm seeing time and time again, what we think is going to be rapid change with digital is going to be at a whole different level, and you've said this in the past. So for me, I want to go through like a business premise of helping young entrepreneurs, you know, grow and come up with ideas for a business and then execute on that, and also how to think forward at the end of the show about how this might apply in a new economy as well. And the thing that's always frustrated me over the journey is I see a lot of people have really great ideas. However, only a small minority actually ever implement simple plans and execute on those ideas. And I think as a business owner, and look, yeah, I'm probably a little bit biased because I have been for a long time now, but I see a lot of courage, resilience, people skills that are required, strategies and smarts as well. And I think that I'm just conscious of, and sorry to take you back to 2000, the year 2000, I'm just conscious of me having a really good income at that time, being in the bank, lucky enough to be in a financial job at the time. And I remember earning 80 grand and I could buy a house in Nuttawatting for 160,000. So two times my income. And then I go, when I look at it today with people getting into the market and they're having to spend like 8 to 10 times sometimes their income, which is to me just crazy when I think about the cost of living going up. I mean, we could have a partner at home looking after the kids. You know, you could live a good life based on that income buying at that level. So for me, the concern is how do people in a job actually achieve any form of, you know, wealth through property, or, you know, they're trying to get into the market and then they have to struggle to hold, and you know, it's a lot of pressure. Then they want to have a family and you go, there's a lot of expenses having a family now as well. So it just seems to be that, I don't know, the trend doesn't feel like it's in your favor, and not to be a pessimist on it, but I'm trying to challenge our audience and friends of our audience to go, well, potentially taking your expertise into a business setting where you can make 10 times the amount of potential salary that you are making. There's a lot of hard work in that, but I go, how do you get the ratios back in your favor, and what is the idea that can potentially get you there? So I just want to open that up, gents, into exploring that a little bit with you. But first of all, I want to ask you both, what incentivizes you to be a business owner and make that jump, Jace? I'll start with yourself because you're both business owners, but what was the incentive and the driver for you to do that? Why?
Oof. Good question. I don't necessarily think it was financially driven.
No, I don't think it was either.
No. So, you know, I think for me it became around problem solving or knowing I could help more people.
Yeah.
I think in the role that I was in at the time, you know, I had a pretty much a set role of what I had to do at a certain client base that I could look after. But when I was going out to the Business Blueprint with Dale Beaumont, sitting in a room surrounded by business owners who were talking about their problems. And as an employee, I sat there going, oh, I could help that person. They should try this. Or, oh, that, you know, actually that's a way to solve that problem. They need to look at this. But because I was an employee, younger, working in a business, my opinion or my voice wasn't necessarily heard. So that kind of fueled the fire that, okay, cool, I'm going to start a business, employ a great team of people who can you know, with my help or with their help, I can then solve more problems for more people and help business owners get to where they want to be. You know, decomplicating the tax system and, you know, creating answers for people. So I think that was the driver. And obviously being surrounded by good people. I mean, you know, going into business with Greg and doing what we do has been a great journey, and getting to work with clients like Tommy. I mean, that those kind of things are when the phone rings and somebody that, you know, you want to answer the phone and help somebody. And obviously then if you can, as you said, get the numbers right, get the model right, and there is a financial benefit to that as opposed to, you know, playing a smaller game. Obviously, that's a win as well.
Mm. Yeah. And yourself, Tommy, like you have a certain specialization, which I love that creative side. And but what was the drivers for you to be in your own business instead of working a job out there?
Strictly money, Marty. No, I left school when I was 17. So I started my first business as a personal trainer just that year. And so I always wanted to, I guess I saw my dad working for himself. He had a landscape architecture business and had a bunch of staff and worked with him for a bit. But I just always liked the energy of creating your future. So taking control and being able to build out, you know, the business, the relationships. And then along the way, I've always just sort of done the things that sort of really energized me. And so it's always been sort of on finding out where that is. So it started in personal training, it then got into media, radio. I hosted a radio show, then it sort of worked its way to creating video content, and then podcasting became a big part of my life. So it's, you know, it's all sort of edged towards those things that I'm ultimately passionate about. And then the businesses have come from the other side. And so even going back to the personal training, I was training a lot myself, doing a lot of kickboxing. And so it's always come from the passion of, you know, being into something that for myself that I've then been able to translate to a product or being out a service for somebody else.
I love that answer in regards to what energizes you. And a lot of times, a lot of times people do it for the money, you know, I love that answer that you're actually creating that foundation of being energized, and then it monetizes off the back of the specialization.
Yeah, which, I couldn't actually do it for the money. I think I took a job in a radio station in 2016 or 2015, just before I started my video production business. And it was the best money I'd ever earned, but I was the least happy I'd ever been. And then just, you know, like the struggle that comes with running a business is not as painful as the struggle I find working in, you know, working for somebody. And, you know, you don't want someone like me working for you if that's the case. Some people really enjoy that structure and, you know, being able to rock up and do what they need to do and it all being clear for them. But I kind of have thrived off that ambiguity and being able to generate business and just the energy that comes from, you know, winning new business, forming relationships. You know, Jace was my accountant for one of my businesses, and, you know, you see just like the evolution of that relationship and what we have here. It's like, I just love being able to see those that look back on that journey. And I value that, you know, over money for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, and one of the keys I wanted to just give the audience is, like, when they're starting a business, a few key indicators that are really, really important. And you've described a lot of those, Tommy, in your own journey. But one of the things you always have to ask yourself is, you've got to understand your key strengths and capabilities. Like, I think that's really important. Like, and I'll give you some context. Like, for me, it was going into mortgages and finance. Was my strength is small business. Like, I understand businesses under $10 million of revenue, turnover, profit ratios, financial ratios. So I can have a big impact in regards to helping people through those types of business sectors as well, which I really enjoy. Finance is a strength of mine, home, investment, business lending. For some reason, numbers just seem to work in my my head, and I really enjoy helping people when they're not so strong in those, that I can make a difference and save them money and help them have a better life through that vehicle as well. Then the other thing I would say to the audience, you know, thinking about those key indicators is, you know, value drivers. You know, I love supporting people. I love supporting business owners. I love people being better for meeting me because of what I can do. You've got to have that authentic driver. And you described that beautifully, Tommy, in regards to that. And the other strength I feel I have is sales, more from a market education, word of mouth and execution, in understanding the premise of how to help people. Some people think sales is a terrible thing, but I think you're always selling a premise, but as long as it's based on authenticity and it's based on the drivers of helping people get ahead, I think you're doing it for people, not to people. And that's always been a big factor for me. But that, I think you've got to understand yourself. And if I was going to throw something else in, it would be creativity, because I, you know, grew up doing stand-up and I definitely had those creative elements, and that helped me bring different concepts together, which helped me as a business owner that someone literal in business might not have ever entertained. So I think it's really important to first sit down and understand your key strengths. And I'm only saying mine to give context, but to sit down and write down 4 or 5 key areas, if you have a specialization in your job and you think you could turn that into a business, to sit down and go, what are those core strengths? Because that'll be helpful as the business grows too, to know where to delegate as well when you have inevitable weaknesses as well. Does that resonate at all, Jace, as a first premise?
100%. Absolutely spot on. I mean, yeah, even like hearing Tommy describe, you know, the journey that he took, there was another point that he said around, I think it was your dad. You said, Tommy, you know, he had a business, and I had that flashback that my dad was running his own business before GST came in. And I was a young kid watching dad, you know, come home and do the books, and he was writing in his, you know, debits and credits. But then when GST came in 2000, my dad ended up throwing in the towel. He went, stuff it, you know, all the stuff I'm already doing, and now I've got to add another tax in there. Like, oh, it's just too hard. I'm going to go get a job. And he shut down his business. He was doing lawn mowing and home maintenance, loved being outdoors, loved getting onto people's properties and tidying them up and painting and decks and pergolas. And all of a sudden the business was gone, and he probably wasn't as happy when he was back working for the man, I guess he'd describe it as. But that was something, as Tommy spoke about, oh, actually that was another thing that kind of was that passion or that fuel to be able to help people. So yes, yeah. I think, yeah, that understanding your why, and then also understanding those strengths that you mentioned, Marty, those key things of what makes you able to do the business you get into, super important.
I've talked about in previous episodes, like we had a milk bar in the 80s. So, you know, it was a small business, but I always loved the value it brought to people in the community. And, you know, Dad would let me run the bread stand. So it was like, you know, I picked up stuff out of that, and my primary driver was the fact that I knew that the banks weren't supporting Dad as he was growing. And I always felt that he was, you know, I always felt bad for him, and I never wanted that to happen to anyone else. So it's a real authentic driver to me to help people get into a better position. So it's like, and I think you've got to tap into something like that. Like you said, it might be your parents have done something, or a friend of the family have done something that you resonate with. I think, it's you've got to draw on those strengths when you're thinking of ideas, because otherwise in those tough times, if you haven't got those authentic drivers, you can fall away pretty quickly, right? So it's a handy thing to have. The next thing, once you've worked out what your key strengths and, you know, capabilities are, then the question to ask is, what are the problems that need to be solved? So what are the problems that need to be solved that you could solve? Again, in context, for me, people are cash flow strapped. If I can put money in their pocket by giving them a better interest rate, changing terms on a debt, helping them for the future, that's huge for me. The other areas I can help with, future financial concerns. People worry about that future of theirs and their family's future. If you can create some, you know, some understanding and knowledge around that and give them a template forward, then that, you know, that helps, you know, just helps. People don't trust banks necessarily. And rightly so. But they don't trust banks, because banks are working in the best interest for the shareholders. And I was in the inner sanctum of the banks, so I know the return on each client is very, very, very valuable. And look, businesses need to know that, but all businesses, small businesses, big businesses, I get that. But I also think that you can put the person, the client, in the best position and help them, which just brings more business at the end of the day by doing the right thing. Whereas I never felt like they had that intention. And financial literacy is a problem that can be solved. It's not something, you know, business acumen's not taught so much at school. It's starting to come in a lot more now and needs to. But just financial literacy, like I think if we can educate people to feel safe to make that next move or to buy that investment or to live a good life, whatever the case may be for them, and that's what you got to ask yourself. What problems are you solving that are going to be valuable to the market to get feedback on in order to, you know, in order to you might just have a business, right? Tommy, what problem do you solve with what you do? Sorry to put you on the spot with it, but what's the sort of problem that you solve for people that people really find valuable given the feedback you hear back?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting listening to you articulate it like you are, because I've probably never thought like that. What I've said to myself is, God, I'm lucky that I'm in an industry that is on the rise. And so when I was interested in making videos with, you know, the accessible nature of cameras wasn't like it is now. It was harder. When I first started, my mate would edit stuff and he had to like take what we shot and play it out in real time and feed it into the computer. So if you shot an hour's worth of footage, you would feed an hour through, you know, from the tape through into the editing software. And so there's been a massive sort of bridge through this barrier that I was at the start of. And, you know, it's not that I was, you know, I just started liking it at the time and I was using little cameras. And so it really just was, yeah, that passion to see that I started making video content for myself and then got into the media space. But yeah, I've really said to myself, I'm lucky that I'm in an industry that is popular at the moment. I can't, yeah. It really, like, that's luck at that time. But now, as I've understood business more, I've understood the problem solving, and I've understood my ability, my skill set, and I can help people communicate their messaging for their business or their story through video and podcasts, you know, and I'm good at it. And so that's taken years to understand that and to actually spend the time getting good at something. But now I know what that problem is that I can solve. And it is, you know, being able to offer my skill set in a space that is, you know, I guess it's hot. It's like, you know, it's bridging those two bits that was like something that was popular and then something that my skill set, you know, I had as a skill set, and then being able to offer that as a solution to people who couldn't or, you know, didn't understand how to do that.
That was the perfect storm for me in mortgage broking at the time. Yeah. People, you know, needed the advice. It wasn't available and you could help. And it was just, sometimes I think it's fortunate on timing, right? But I think about what you do, Tommy, and it's like, you know, in the business world, it's so important to position yourself as an expert and to have quality audio content being put out there that, you know, a numbers brain just can't always work out, right? And it's and that's, you know, you put us in the best light. So how I look at clients in putting them in their best future selves and helping them get ahead, you know, using numbers, you do that in regards to your medium. And I think that's, you know, tremendous that, you know, Jace, you would no doubt have your thoughts on that as well with what Tommy does. But yeah, I'm always amazed at the content he produces and very thankful that he's good at what he does, because I just wouldn't have a clue.
we're very lucky. We could always do a Tommy appreciation episode at any time, because the previous 212 episodes don't get onto the internet, Spotify, Apple, YouTube without Tommy's magic, and obviously
Marty's
whole
mic
bunch
definitely
of other
doesn't
stuff.
Turn on without me being here, but that's another story, isn't it, Marty?
Oh, jeez. No, that's it. No, it's very clear, you know. And look, I love the simplicity, in a sense, for us of how Tommy solved that problem of being able to put content out you know, the numbers game content that we do, that very much is a big problem that was solved for us. I mean, and that's only like a drop in the ocean of the things that Tommy can do. So
He simplifies, not to love him too much here, but he simplifies complexities for us that we can't solve because he's very, very good at it. So it's like, and I think in all businesses, usually you see businesses have, you know, there's one problem to solve, one solution, one positioning in the market, and, you know, good execution on it. And a lot of the times people overcomplicate things. But if you have a passion for something and you're good at it and you can see a direct opportunity to help, there might just be a business in it. And it's not to be discounted too quickly because it's amazing what you can bring to the table as an individual. Mm. And that's what I want to encourage people to think about. And the other thing I would say as a business, you do need to have some street smarts around your financials. I think that's, I've seen a lot of businesses over time when I was doing some accountability mentoring for business owners, great ideas, very good at what they did, but fell down on the financials. So that's just been, maybe it's because the role I was in at the time, but I saw that if you can pay the business first, make sure there's profitability there, usually 25%, so a very, very healthy number, changes from different industries. But again, you know your expense ratios, you know, it might be 50% expenses, however you want to cut it, between wages and cost of goods, whatever the case may be, taxes 25%, just basic metrics. Tricks when you're starting, but make sure you have enough money there in the bank to make sure that business can breathe and that you don't overspend in certain areas in order to get somewhere quicker than where you think you should be. But at the end of the day, you burn your cash flows. And I've seen that happen. We've all made that mistake at some time. But yeah, again, and the market dictates the opportunity too. If you're doing something that is really valuable in the market, the market will give you direct feedback, you know, and that's why word of mouth is so powerful. Everyone's been paying for social media stuff to get more likes and to be perceived as having many more followers. But the organic stuff is the real market, right? Mm. And I know people are experts in it and probably do it really well, and that's okay. But to me, the reality is, you know, if you're putting stuff out there and people are coming back to it and it's of value, then you've got direct market feedback, which is tremendous. And you can test that on your socials. You know, do your content creation, get your message out there and see what the response is. You'll get a guide and just be consistent on it. But I think what's really interesting, we say it in the financial world, is past performance does not dictate future performance. And I think especially with AI. So I could be talking about all these things from the past, which are good and can get you a sweet spot of getting your business up and running. But I think like Jason has informed me over time, yeah, AI is changing everything at a rapid rate of knots. And I really do think the next 2 or 3 years is going to be a game changer. And I think just how quickly you can get access to knowledge, you know, like I said, go years to school to try and get this knowledge, and within 3 seconds, you're going to have it in the palm of your hands. And it's going to be a brave new world. And it's not something to be panicked about. It's to ride with it and go, where is the opportunity in it, given your interests and your skill sets as well? So make sure you're asking that question. How will we utilize it to advance people? Will be critical. And you know, they say knowledge is power, but maybe not so much anymore, right? It's like, because you're going to have access to it. So it's how you can utilize that. You'll be able to get that more efficiently, and how you can utilize it. And I really feel like, from what I'm seeing, and it sort of excites me too in a way, that experiences are going to be a big thing again. Like people getting together and engaging and connecting again is going to be the new frontier. I think sports, entertainment, travel are going to be all areas of opportunity. Like I look at the marathons you run, Jace, and I go, people are not only getting together for the running, they're getting together to be a part of something, to see the world. And to, you know, to go beyond, you know, go beyond just saying I ran a marathon. And that's what's interesting. And that's why I think there's a lot of investment in sports. Entertainment's, I think, going to be huge moving forward. But I don't know what it's going to look like, but I know that things are changing and we have to keep our ear to the ground to keep listening out for where we can have an impact with those changes. Jace?
Oh, mate, you've laid out a lot to unpack there, but I couldn't agree more. And as someone who's, you know, avidly watching and being part of the AI space, especially, you know, I'm keeping an eye on it in my profession in the accounting space. But even as a business advisor talking to my clients, I mean, AI is becoming, there's noise. The noise is building. I mean, I know we've been talking about AI for 2 years now. I think November 2022 was when ChatGPT first released V1, or maybe not even 23. No, it must be 2 years now. Has to be. But, you know, all of a sudden, we're seeing it in action. We're seeing what it can do. You know, there's more and more things popping up on Instagram and whatever, people promoting, you know, if you're not using AI, click this button and we'll get AI to do this for you. And it's only going to get noisier and noisier, and businesses will look different. I was talking to a careers advisor who was talking about how they're talking to primary school kids about the types of jobs that they'll be going for when they come out of high school or go to university. They don't even exist at the moment. So when you start to think about, well, hang on a minute, what is this world we're getting into where there's jobs that don't even exist yet that primary school kids are being spoken to about? You know, and even when you think about how your business runs today to how it will run in a couple of years. I mean, I know, Marty, you talked about, you know, what your businesses or what your industries look like and change over the time. But, you know, when I first started, I had paper PDF bank statements. I had a ruler, I had a pencil, and I ruled line by line on a bank statement as I manually typed it into Cashflow Manager on a computer. And at the end of that, if it didn't match the physical bank statement, I had to start again and figure out which line item I missed. It was manual, it was time consuming, but I was charging my hourly rate to the person who, you know, the business I was working for, I was doing the best. It was inefficient. Now we've got Xero and cloud technology and AI soon. Soon you're going to be able to send a WhatsApp message to Xero to tell it to raise an invoice on your behalf, and AI will go in there and do it all for you and send it to the client and probably take the money. And that's only phase one of this future of what AI can do. And it's not even a drop in the ocean of what we're going to be up against. But yeah, you need to be thinking about it. You need to be considering it. You need to be putting plans in place. If you don't think that AI is going to be helpful in your business and you haven't even thought about it, now's probably the time to go, okay, start to explore, start to be curious. You know, I describe, you know, when I'm doing AI talks in the accounting profession, I don't say I'm an AI expert. I'm AI curious. I'm just AI curious. I just keep, you know, keep getting fed info and listening to things and having a read, because I would rather be AI curious and know what's out there and not necessarily be the expert that's using all the tech and tools yet, but I want to know what's out there and I want to know what we're going to be up against. Because if there is an accounting firm down the road that is fully invested in AI right now and they're deep into it, that's a threat to my business one day if I can't do what they can do. And my clients go, well, hang on, I think I have to be down there with them instead. So, you know, think about your profession or your industry. What is that? What are the potential risks or threats that looks like for you if you're not getting your headspace into that realm, Tommy?
I empathize with people that don't have that natural curiosity or interest in AI. And I feel lucky that I'm so interested in it. And I've managed to bridge so many skill gaps that I've had using AI to run my own business. And it's like, I think I definitely would have increased my revenue purely based on just being able to use a tool like AI. And it's not even to sort of outsource my work to get it done and then get it done for clients and charge them more money. It's actually just being able to bring efficiencies to my workflows. And I'm great at communicating with my words, but I, you know, sometimes struggle translating that through just written word. And so if you can get, you know, I dictate into my phone nonstop into these AI platforms. I record most conversations and just being able to reference back. There is not a business that couldn't utilize this new technology, and it's just getting over that. If you're not interested in it, somehow finding a link into that chain, because it is going to be that future for most businesses.
Yeah, don't be fearful of it. You got to go with it and ask yourself the question, where is the opportunity? I'm seeing a lot of you know, younger and older, you know, sort of business owners, even in business acquisitions, going, the efficiencies I can create in an older school business that's actually a really good business, but it's a little bit archaic in regards to processes, are huge, absolutely huge. And they're creating, you know, huge, not so much, they don't even have to increase the revenues dramatically, but they can cut the expense utilizing all this technology. And it's like you're just seeing this changing environment now in the business sector. So I would encourage people to ask themselves, where is the opportunity? And if they're curious, just, you know, look at the skill sets you have. Where does those curiosities foster into practical opportunities where you can really display, you know, a value out there in the market? And there might be businesses coming up, like you said, the primary school kids, you know, preparing for jobs that aren't there yet, but there might be businesses coming up that you will see because of your curiosities that no one else can. So just keep an open mind and the cycle always turns into something new. But the internet, when it first came out, we thought that would be a quicker premises to the impact it would have, but it was a slower burn. But I think AI is going to be what we thought it was in 2000. And I think that's exciting and also a little bit scary, but it's good to be scared sometimes.
great discussion points, Marty. I always love what you bring to the table and in your open discussions. If you've liked this episode, please, if you haven't given us a rating yet, go and give us a 5-star on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. Once again, Tommy's joined in, filled the gap for Nick. So if you haven't checked out VidPod, check out vidpod.com.au or jump onto Instagram and give VidPod a little follow too. Tommy will love all that little extra support. But mate, we've loved having you on. Thanks again, Tommy. It's been brilliant having you, and thank you, Marty, for everything you've covered today. Until next time.
AI plus EQ equals opportunity. Game over.
This podcast is for educational and informational purposes only. The conversations are of a general nature and do not qualify as financial or tax advice. We recommend before you make any financial decisions, you consult a licensed professional. Individuals on the podcast may hold positions in the companies discussed.